With Pastor Teacher Harry Reeder, this is In Perspective.
What a great opportunity it is for believers to stand forth differently in their lives and in their families and where they work and where they live and in their school and in the classroom and everywhere you find them, the opportunity for the distinctive difference, that it can be clearer and clearer. When the evil rises up, the rock stands more powerful. When evil rises up, then the kingdom of light stands in direct contrast to the kingdom of darkness. And that's why a guy like Boaz and something like this is so powerful to look at.
Welcome and stay with us as Dr. Harry Reeder applies the scriptures to the everyday events of life, that we might begin to view our existence from God's eternal perspective, that we might view all of life from a biblical perspective. Today on In Perspective, Harry brings us part one of the message, Ruth, a Woman of Excellence, and the Plan. We continue with our series, Love Story, Ruth in Biblical Perspective. Ruth was a foreigner living in poverty among the Israelites. She was in a vulnerable position, as the landowners and field workers may have treated her with cruelty and contempt. But Boaz took notice of Ruth, treated her with kindness and compassion, and declared his intention to act as a kinsman redeemer on her behalf. In the same way, Jesus Christ looks upon our spiritual poverty, weakness, and desperation, and acts in grace and mercy on our behalf when we turn to Him in repentance and faith. Have you embraced Him as your Lord and Savior? If you have your Bibles, turn to Ruth 3. Here again is Harry Reeder with part one of the message, Ruth, a Woman of Excellence, and the Plan.
Ruth chapter 3. Ruth 3, whole chapter. I'm getting dizzy just thinking about it. Ruth 3. This is the word of the Lord. It's inspired, inerrant, and infallible. It is our only rule of faith and practice. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, that's Ruth, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you or sustenance for you, that it may be well with you? Now, is not Boaz our kinsman redeemer, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. She came secretly and uncovered his feet and laid down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled, and he bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a kinsman redeemer, a close relative. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all of my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true, I am a close relative, a kinsman redeemer. However, there is a kinsman redeemer closer than I. Remain this night when morning comes. If he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning. So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Again he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. May the Lord bless his word to the hearts and lives of his people. Amen. I picked up the Boston magazine. It's called Boston. I guess that's enough. And in the Boston magazine, it says, "Men, women, meet your new boss. The next power class in America. They're brash. They're cynical. They're selfish. They're driven. They're smart. Generation X is taking charge, and it's all about me." Now, when you read that, what's your reaction? You know, my first reaction is disheartened because I think of the past, the influence of Christianity, and the influence of Christianity in these great philanthropists that we have had over the last 50 to 60 years, businessmen and women, and how they saw what had happened to them through their work and opportunity as an opportunity to help other people. And then I read this, they're brash, they're cynical. It sounds like a come on for a sitcom or a soap opera or something. They're brash, they're cynical, they're selfish, they're driven, they're smart, they're greedy, they're going to take charge. And then I get disheartened when I think about the obvious death spiral in our culture that something like this would be written. But then I get kind of excited. Because I can't help but think, if this is the way the world is going, what a great opportunity for the contrast of men and women in the marketplace of life to show the difference that Christ makes. I look at the picture of this guy they got, brash, cynical, smart, debonair, swavy, all that stuff, and cynical and driven and everything else, and I look at him, and as I look at him, I begin to think of Boaz. Now, he's not brash, he's humble. He's not cynical, he's encouraging. He's not selfish, he's giving. You see, when you get men and women of God, and you see what grace does in the life of a believer, and it makes its way out of Sunday morning pews into where they work and where they live and in their neighborhood and in their business, and when the world goes in this direction, what a great opportunity for the contrast of a Christian witness through godly men and women. I do get disheartened and overwhelmed sometimes when I see the free fall, the moral free fall in our culture. But on the other hand, I can't help but think of what a great opportunity it is for believers to stand forth differently in their lives and in their families and where they work and where they live and in their school and in the classroom and on the athletic team and everywhere you find them, the opportunity for the distinctive difference that it can be clearer and clearer. When the evil rises up, the rock stands more powerful. When evil rises up, the shield stands forward. When evil rises up, then the kingdom of light stands in direct contrast to the kingdom of darkness. And that's why a guy like Boaz and something like this is so powerful to look at. We're in chapter 3, and it's truly, I can't go through chapter 3 and divide. Well, I could have. I really thought about, prayed about the possibility of dividing it up into 3 sections, but I really think we need to take this as a whole. You know, if you look back in the previous chapters, we had the barley field incident. Now we've got the threshing floor encounter. We've got something that happens in this that I want you to see and understand it. When we get to the end of this, and the next few minutes, here's what I'd like for you to come away with. I'd like for you to come away with encouraged by the progress of grace in the life of a believer. Encouraged by the progress of grace in the life of a believer. The second thing I'd like for you to take away from this is that I would like for you to be encouraged as you see more clearly who Christ is through the type of Christ, the kinsman redeemer, Boaz. We've already looked at Boaz as a type of Christ, but in this chapter, it even gets a little clearer how he typifies Christ as a kinsman redeemer for our encouragement, the one who has redeemed us, Christ. And we can see more clearly our redeemer and what happens when we put our trust in him. And there's a third takeaway in this. The encouragement as you see the progress of grace in the life of a believer. Secondly, that you see more clearly who Christ is through this type that we have here in Boaz. And then the third thing I want you to see is I want you to see what an example and model of grace looks like. When God does a work in somebody's life, what does the model look like? Now, I know we're all supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus, but Jesus clearly in the Word affirms the fact that we need some signposts along the way. Men and women of God who stand exemplifying and modeling for us what Christ does when He lives in the hearts of men and women. And those models become examples for us, just like Paul said to Timothy, "Imitate me as I imitate Jesus Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ. So, if you'll just remember those three things, the progress of grace, clarity of Christ as our Redeemer through the type of Christ in Boaz, and thirdly, a model of grace for men and women to learn from. We'll learn the progress of grace by looking at the life of Naomi. We'll see the type of Christ by looking at the life of Boaz in chapter 3. And we'll see a model of grace by taking another look at Ruth as we leave chapter 3. All right? Now, here's what I like to do. I'd like just to go through this text, and I like to divide it up into three categories for you. Three categories, and they're simply this. First of all, in verses 1 through 5, we've got a dialogue of Ruth and Naomi. I just want to pick out a few things for you. A dialogue between Ruth and Naomi. And then in verses 6 through 15, we've got a subsequent dialogue between Ruth and Boaz. So you have a dialogue of conversation going on between Ruth and Naomi. Then you have a subsequent dialogue in the next section of the text between Boaz and Ruth. And then you've got a concluding dialogue between Ruth and Naomi in verses 16 through 18. A concluding dialogue between them in verses 16 through 18. All right, let's take this on one step at a time here. First of all, the dialogue of Ruth and Naomi in verses 1 through 5. The first thing I want you to see three things in verses 1 through 5. In this dialogue, there's something astounding, and I hope those of you who have been with us in our study of Ruth, I hope you see it, that immediately in the dialogue, Naomi is talking with Ruth, but she is not talking about herself, she is not talking about the past, she is not talking about God as her adversary. Remember how she used to talk? Now she says this, "My daughter, I'm concerned for your well-being." The first thing that comes out in their dialogue is Naomi's concern for Ruth's well-being, her security. Literally, the word means her sustenance, how she is going to be cared for. So she immediately voices her concern for Ruth. Second thing is that Naomi has a plan. She's got a plan, and the plan is this. Now listen, you've been working in these fields, you've been working in the barley fields, you've been working in the barley harvest, in this one who is a close relative, Boaz, and I want you to go back to that field, and now they're harvesting. The gleaning and the harvesting is through, they're finishing, now they're going to the threshing floor. Now folks, the threshing floor, don't get too excited about it. You remember the threshing floor of Onan is the place where they built the temple. What it means is in the field there was a big flat rock. That's what it means. A threshing floor was a big flat rock in which they brought the harvest, and what they would do is pile up the grain, and somebody would sit there with a threshing fork, and they would throw it into the grain, and they would come over to the threshing floor, and they would throw it up in the air. What would happen? The chaff, as you kept throwing it up, the chaff, the wind would drive away, and the grain would fall down. The wind would become the sifter for you to drive the chaff away. And then you would walk on it to crunch it up some more, and that would crunch up the shell around the grain, and you'd go back through the process again until you got down as good as you could to grain itself. So they're in a threshing floor, and she said, go to that thread. Here's the plan. And she says, kind of take a bath. That's kind of sounds like a good idea. Anoint yourself, be presentable here, and go there to the threshing floor. And when it's all over, now notice what she says. Go to verses 2 and 3 with me. She said, "I want you to go there, and when you get there to this one, verse 3, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best clothes, go down to the threshing floor, but don't make yourself known. Just be there among the crowd. And then if it's a good harvest, they have a feast, so there'll be eating and drinking. And don't make yourself known until after that. Because after eating and drinking, well, you know what happens after eating and drinking in a feast is that you go take a nap. And so he's going to go lay down. And when he lies down, look where he lies. And then you go over there, uncover his feet." Now, you see, men in that day wore large robes. And the robes were folds. There were folds that were there. They would use them for many things. For instance, if they're out with their wife and bad weather would come, they would take the fold and put it around their wife and carry. In fact, the very word in the Hebrew that talks about that garment is another word, wings. It has its root in the concept of wings. So go to his fold. And see what happened. You're there at the threshing floor. You've eaten, you've drank, and now you lay down and you begin to go on to sleep. And as you go to sleep, you cover yourself. I mean, this thing is kind of an all-purpose garment that you got. You cover yourself with it. And so those folds are laying over him. And you go and uncover his feet, and you lay down at his feet, having uncovered his feet, and you lay down with the folds of that garment then over you. And so then Ruth, you'll note that Ruth submits. Now, so we got Naomi's concern for Ruth, and then Naomi's plan, and Ruth's submission. But the third thing is this: what is Ruth's purpose in this? What is Ruth's purpose in this? Well, first of all, I think she's got two purposes. And the first thing is she wants to find out what are the intentions of Boaz. Boaz has taken a clear interest in this woman. He has taken a clear interest, and he is a kinsman redeemer. So she wants to know, what are his intentions? Where is he going? And where is the Lord leading in this? Where is the Lord leading, and what is Boaz's intentions in terms of his relationship with this one whom he has taken so much time with back in chapter 2? Now, but let me tell you, she's got kind of, here I think is really what Naomi's plan is. Do you remember when Naomi went with her husband Elimelech to Moab? Remember that? She went to Moab. She lost her husband. She lost her two sons. She ended up with two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, right? Okay, Ruth and Orpah. And she goes back, and when she talks to them, she says, listen, as they're returning, she says, I can't take care of you. What was the way that she could take care of her widowed daughters-in-law? Was by them is called the law of the leveret. Her next son would be required to marry them, but she doesn't have any sons. And she said, if you wait around for me to have a son, which is pretty questionable since I'm a widow, and who's going to take me on, and can I have children? And even if I did have children, would you wait around till they were old enough to take care of you? She said, this law of the leveret is not going to help you. But when they get there was another law that God had in place to help families, and that was the law of the kinsman redeemer. That was a close relative from the extended family who could redeem, buy the people out, because why? The family was supposed to minister to those in need. So if the immediate family couldn't do it through another son, then the extended family would do it with a goel, a kinsman redeemer. Here's what Naomi's plan is. Boaz is one of two remaining kinsman redeemers. He has taken an interest in you. What she's really wanting to find out is, will the kinsman redeemer go beyond being a kinsman redeemer and become their leveret? Will he go beyond what he would be required to do in the extended family to take care of us? And would he actually do what the leveret was supposed to do, the brother was supposed to do, and that is marry her? What her plan is to find out what his intentions are. Will the kinsman redeemer become a leveret and take her in as a wife? Well, that's what the dialogue creates in verses 1 through 5. Now, so Ruth submits and she goes, and the first thing you see is a setting. The subsequent dialogue in verses 6 through 15. They're at the threshing floor. The threshing floor, the harvest is over. It's a good harvest, so they have a feast. When they have a feast, they have a celebration. Celebration includes eating and it includes drinking. Now, the second thing is Ruth then executes the plan. But if you'll note, Ruth does not just execute the plan. Ruth executes a new and improved plan. Look, if you would, in verse 7. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was merry. He came to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. She came secretly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night. The man startled. He bent forward. The woman was lying at his feet. Who are you? She said, I am Ruth, your maid. Here's where she adds. She doesn't just wait to see what he says. She says this, spread your wings, your folds, your covering over your maid, for you are my kinsman redeemer. There's no other way around this. I don't know what this is going to do to those of us who try to work through all the issues of feminism and masculinity and all of that. But the basic thing is she proposes. That's what she's doing. She didn't wait for one. She didn't wait for the call. She went ahead and made the proposal. When she's saying, spread your garment over me, with all of the cultural symbolism, she is asking him, would you take me as your maid, who has been among your maids, as a kinsman redeemer, would you become the leveret? Would you take me? So she doesn't wait to find out what the man is going to do. She suggests to the man what he might want to do. And that is, take me in as your wife. By adding this phrase that she then responds to his being there. Now, folks, just a couple of things about this execution of this plan. I've read the commentaries and all of the people that suggesting what you have here is a polite Bible language for a sexual encounter. Folks, the language does not demand in subtlety or in carefulness or in any way the notion of a sexual encounter. There is no, the reason a sexual encounter is read into this is not because of the culture that is indicated in the Bible literature. It's read into there because of our preoccupation with reading that into anything that we can put our hands around almost. And we almost interpret everything with some sexual connotation or innuendo. No, the text is telling you what happened. She comes and lays down at his feet and uncovers his feet. Now, there's two things she uncovers. When she uncovers his feet and the folds are there, that's making a cultural statement, and she goes ahead and acknowledges it. Here is your maid, and would you cover it? Would you now cover me? Would you now bring me in into this relationship? And there is a bold initiation, but the bold initiation is not some sexual encounter. The bold initiation is terms of marriage and the law of the leveret, the kinsman redeemer becoming a leveret in her life. That's what the initiation is. Now, we insist on seeing the other. Let me tell you. First of all, the cultural language does not demand reading a sexual encounter. Secondly, the actual language prohibits a sexual encounter. Why, two verses later, would he call her a woman of nobility and excellence if she has just prostituted herself? She hasn't prostituted herself. She has not become immoral in the relationship. She's not trying to sexually trap him. What she has done is the next step in responding to his initiation and care for her as a kinsman redeemer is that, could you now become my leveret? Could you marry me? And she is now coming to him and initiating that. And by the way, if you uncover somebody's feet, there's another blessing to that. If you want to have a conversation with them, they'll probably wake up in the middle of the night. You uncover my feet, I'll wake up in the middle of the night. I just, you know, we might have gotten cold. I don't know, but his feet gets uncovered. He wakes up. He's startled. What in the world's going on? He sees this woman. She responds to him. And then thirdly, note his response to her. Boaz's response to her. He gives to her a proposal. He says, daughter, do not fear. I will do what you ask. In other words, I do. Now, we got a little change here. It's normally the man asking and the woman saying, I will, or I do, or, you know, some fit of ignorance. She says, I believe you and I'll go through with this. But in this case, she's asking and he says, I'll do what you ask, but I can't. Ethically, it's amazing. People are trying to read sexual innuendos here. And here's a man who is so ethical in the moment that he will not take advantage of the opportunity of this woman's presence by reminding her there's someone else who's closer than he is. And so he says to her that we have to handle this matter of you. There is a closer relative than I am. But in his response, notice his acknowledgement of this one who now looked to him. My guess is speculation. Boaz is somewhat older than her because he is amazed that she would look to him and not to the closer relative who probably is younger and, if I read the text right, might be richer than him. He says, you haven't gone after a younger man and you haven't gone after poor or rich. In other words, the financial thing didn't enter in and the age thing didn't enter in. And he says, you as a woman of excellence have come to me. And now he proposes, let me handle this. And notice what he says, I will redeem you as the Lord lives. In other words, he places what he is going to do for her on the basis of the living Lord and the power of the Lord. And if this man will not redeem you, I will redeem you as the Lord lives. You go ahead and lie down. So that is his response and his proposal to her. Now, what about the concluding dialogue in verses 16 through 18? When they get back in verse 16, Ruth comes up to her mother-in-law, and the first thing her mother-in-law says is, not how much food you got now, but how did it go with you, my daughter? How did it go with you, my daughter? Naomi inquires how things went with Ruth. And then Ruth told her the whole story. And then she said, and he gave me these 6 measures of barley. That's pounds and pounds of barley. And he said, don't go empty-handed to your mother-in-law, so I brought this back. Naomi inquires, Ruth reports the incident out in its fullness, and then finally, thirdly, in this concluding dialogue, Naomi gives some advice. Be patient. Be confident. She's got confidence. She says, Ruth, don't get anxious. Don't get nervous. Be patient. It'll be settled today. Why? Boaz is a man of his word, and he said, I will settle it tomorrow. So you be patient. You just rest in what Boaz has promised to do.
Boaz took notice of Ruth, treated her with kindness and compassion, and declared his intention to act as a kinsman redeemer on her behalf. In the same way, Jesus Christ looks upon our spiritual poverty, weakness, and desperation and acts in grace and mercy on our behalf. Join us again next time as we continue with our series, Love Story, Ruth in Biblical Perspective. Now, if you would like to receive an audio copy of the entire message from which today's In Perspective was taken, write and request Ruth, A Woman of Excellence and the Plan. Or simply ask for message number 8147. Again, that's message number 8147. We do request $5 to underwrite the cost of the CD along with shipping and handling. Address your request to In Perspective, 2200 Briarwood Way, Birmingham, Alabama 35243. Email inperspective@briarwood.org. One of the greatest joys in the Christian life is raising a family. One of the biggest challenges in the Christian life is raising a family. Pastor Reader's series, 7 Essentials for the Christian Family, will help equip your family to experience life triumphantly in Christ. This 12 sermon series album, 7 Essentials for the Christian Family, is available for just $36. It's easy to order. Go online to briarwood.org/7essentials. That's briarwood.org/7essentials. For additional video, audio, and written resources, download the Briarwood app. Go to your favorite app store, type in Briarwood PCA. Again, our address, In Perspective, 2200 Briarwood Way, Birmingham, Alabama 35243. Email Harry at inperspective@briarwood.org. This is an outreach of the Briarwood Pulpit, a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America, Birmingham, Alabama. Join us again next time as Harry takes us back into the Scriptures so that we might learn to put all of life in biblical perspective.